The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You live here. He lives here.
Hey, Chris, you're doing a great job, and I really appreciate everything you're doing for this country.
I saw your billboard, and I've been tuned in to 990 since.
Listening online, really glad that I found you again. When I lived in North Coventry, PA, that's how I got hit to you.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
It's a beautiful day.
We're online at 990theanswer.com. Largest single day of cases. Now, what does that tell you? Does that tell you that coronavirus in Texas, what does that tell you? I know what you're supposed to think, and here's what they want you to think. That is CNN who's reporting it this morning. They want you to think that means because Texas is a free state, where free people do free things and make decisions for their own lives, and they've got a governor, Greg Abbott, who's allowing people to be free and releasing hairstylists from prison, they want you to think it's Greg Abbott's fault, and that because they have lifted coronavirus restrictions, that suddenly they have seen a surge in coronavirus cases. Now, what do we know about that to be not true? How do we know that's completely silly? We know that's silly because there's more. What are they calling for? And this is going to keep happening, by the way, as people keep screaming more for. The word is testing, right? More testing means what? I know this isn't hard, and I know this may even seem eye-rolling, absurd and insulting to talk to you about because you're a thinking person. Smartest audience on all the radio understands this well. All along, the screaming metric for testing, testing, testing was going to mean, if met, testing, testing, testing had to mean more cases, cases, cases. Because we know that coronavirus has been in the country since probably, and there aren't even people arguing this anymore, it was spreading like wildfire probably since November. Maybe earlier, but at least since November last year. And in so many people, if not most people, they've been asymptomatic about it. There's been absolutely no symptoms, that is, in most people who suffer with this, or well, I mean, who contract this thing. So you test, test, test more, and you know, and you administer more of these things. You take more what they call on-site tests for antibodies, if you ever had it at all, if there was ever a trace in your system about it, and they can determine that you had it there too, and so those all count. Our governor, Dr. Rachel Levine, was asked heading into the weekend again if she was willing to separate out coronavirus antibody testing from the rest of the group, meaning, if you had it, but you no longer have it, do you still count as a COVID case? She said, would you treat those as different? In other words, let me ask you this before we get to what Dr. Rachel Levine said. If I told you that I got two people in the room with me today, one has coronavirus actively carrying it, the other one has, it's like, you know how they can test you? I still don't understand how they do it, but they can test to see if you had a heart attack, you know? And like my dad, he had a stent put in his heart years ago. And when they were in there working on him, they said, oh, you had a heart attack once before. That freaked me out. I remember when he told me that. He said, yeah, they told me that I had a heart attack. He said, I had a heart attack. Yeah. And you're apparently there's, I don't understand it. You may, but they can tell. So think of that as an antibody test for coronavirus. The antibody test, basically, you can tell that you had it. But now you're asymptomatic or it's gone. I mean, there's no trace of it actively alive and well, but it was in your system at one point. Is that the same as currently carrying it or having it? If it's active in your body and you can pass it on or you have symptoms, do you treat them as the same? I don't, personally. You may. Maybe you do. But the point is, Dr. Levine and other Democrats have made it very clear that they want this count, no matter where the count comes from, they want it high and they want it all in. They want everybody in the pool. No demarcation, no nuance in this at all. So if you're a 95-year-old Alzheimer's patient and you die from coronavirus, that should be treated exactly the same as somebody who's 40 years old and contracts coronavirus and dies. Or doesn't even die. Or a 10-year-old kid who's tested and asymptomatic and is carrying it. Treated as the same as a 95-year-old cancer patient who contracts coronavirus. Again, Dr. Birx, there's some stories over the weekend that say Dr. Birx is actually starting to get crossways with the CDC and the way they're counting and tabulating this stuff, which she's kind of already alluded to, that you die with it, not from it. So now we're counting anybody that even has it in their system, even if they've been gravely ill. Majority of U.S. reopens as death toll nears 90,000. That's CNN this morning. They're very excited. We're at 89.5. We're about to crest 90. Boy, when we hit 100,000, how excited they'll be. And they want you to believe that this is all because you're going back to work. Some of you. Not a lot of Pennsylvania. Did you hear Governor Wolf? Governor Wolf has apparently decided to sign a waiver that allows you to take slushy alcoholic drinks on the road with you now. Bars and restaurants, and I understand, please don't misunderstand. I am all for anybody trying to figure out how to survive and make money any way they can. But bars and restaurants have apparently lobbied successfully, and Governor Wolf is going to amend his little shutdown orders so that now you can go buy takeaway, carry away, slushy alcohol drinks. Now that's just, doesn't that just smack of priorities? You can't get a haircut. You can't go to an orthopedic surgeon. You can't have an elective surgery. You know, people are literally foregoing cancer screenings in Pennsylvania, but effectively, you can have takeaway booze, courtesy of Governor Wolf's amendment this week. So I guess that's supposed to be signed soon. Telephone number 610-850-0990. A lot of you commenting from Friday's conversation with the president. That was very exciting. For those of you that didn't get to hear it, we will have that for you at 6:30 this morning. Thought those of you that were up early when we were teasing you with it and you couldn't stick around, you said, Stigall, I can't wait till 8:30. Had to go, so maybe you didn't get to hear it. Always a lot of fun. Got a lot of compliments, not from me, just from the conversation in general. They were most impressed. Most of the comments I got were, I can't believe you kept them for 17 minutes, given what we were told was only going to be 5 to 7. We were the first out of the gate with the president Friday morning in terms of media interviews. So I probably abused the privilege a little bit, but we had a great conversation. I got a number of very nice notes. That was a lot of fun, his first visit here to Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. So sit tight. Be back with you at 11 minutes past 6. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
What's
good morning.
The worst day of the week that gets us all depressed? M-O-N-D-A-Y-S-U-C-K-S. Monday sucks.
Monday sucks.
Monday sucks.
Monday sucks.
Forever will it make you want to cry, cry, cry.
Well, Fast Eddie says that, look, typically there wouldn't be any reason Fast Eddie'd be upset about Monday, but he's in there upset because he's not feeling well today. It's not Corona, though, you don't think?
No, definitely not.
Fast Eddie violated the first rule of this program is not coming in sick. But Fast Eddie only gets sick in the middle of the night. He doesn't get sick. Like, Fast Eddie won't get sick at 7 o'clock on Sunday.
Right.
Fast Eddie doesn't get sick at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. In the afternoon. Fast Eddie only gets sick at 3:30 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
when there's literally nobody to call and nothing to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
We've got to do it. We've got to figure out a better drill for you, Fast Eddie. I don't have a 3:30 alarm. We got to get a backup Fast Eddie when you get sick at 3:30, because it's the only time you get sick.
Right.
I've never met anybody like you.
Hey, man.
Just no symptoms whatsoever when you go to bed.
No.
No symptoms 6A to 7P, but I mean 3:30 in the morning, violent ill.
I was like hot when I went to bed. Like I was sweaty, but that was it. You know?
Well, I'm sorry. Hang in there. We'll see if we can get through it. See, nobody works, though. Monday sucks for you, but nobody else is working.
You're
deemed an essential business, so you're having a rough day in there, and I understand. But the rest of us, you know, we're considered, most of the rest of us anyway. You, me, and Chuck, our engineer, are still considered life-sustaining. Everybody else just Monday is Saturday is Tuesday is Sunday. Nobody cares.
I feel so bad. I called Chuck at the start of the program, and it's just like he's like, "All right, I'll be in." I'm like, "Oh man, I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to get him some coffee or something."
No, just don't give him corona.
Yeah, right.
Now people are going to be wondering if it's coronavirus you carried in here.
Oh, here we go.
There'll be a meeting.
It starts.
You were very courteous, though, I must say. Fast Eddie was very courteous. He came in and he told me that he is not well, and he was all gloved up and masked up. That was very courteous of you.
Thank you very much.
And see, that's what they tell you. They say that that's what you're supposed to do when you're not well. That is to keep me from being. You're doing what Governor Cuomo of New York said. You're doing it out of a courtesy to others.
Yes.
So thank you for being courteous.
You're welcome.
Okay, 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Coming up today, by the way, we got a very busy Monday for you. The Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Mike Terzai, will be with us at 7:30. Amazingly, just no signs of budging from Pennsylvania. Even Phil Murphy of New Jersey. Do you know what Phil Murphy said over the weekend? The governor of New Jersey, he said, I couldn't believe it, because this to me sounds like science. They're letting you go out there and fish and rent boats now and, you know, go down the shore this Memorial Day weekend. That'll kick off. He said that we have a pretty good sense of it being okay if you want, I'm paraphrasing here, but if you want to go outside, basically if you're out of doors where there's, and these were his words, ventilation. We feel pretty good. We feel like we can get our arms around places that are ventilated. And I thought, well, hallelujah. This is just common sense, as obvious as the nose on our faces, being out of doors, being outside. That's why standing outside in the garden center at Home Depot and Lowe's, as I did again this weekend, that's literally where everyone goes because that's the only place to go. The only place to go are the garden centers and Home Depot. And I mean the entire town is in Lowe's and Home Depot. Everyone is there all weekend long. From Friday night till Sunday night, that's where everyone hangs out. Everyone. I mean, the parking lot is as deep full as they make a parking lot. I'm not kidding. And it's, I said to Christine, this is nuts. I can't go into a little local shop where there are five people, but look at the parking lot in Lowe's. It's got to be hundreds of people. There's no line. There's no waiting. And don't misunderstand. I'm not cheering it. I'm just saying how stupid it all is. It's such a farce. And then we put on our little costume mask and we walk in like idiots. And we're walking through the outdoor garden center with our idiotic masks. Everybody bumping into each other, looking at ferns. And I'm like, what are we doing? What is this sham that we're all conducting out of doors?
It's so funny you bring that up, because I actually caught up with a friend. I was driving a lot on Saturday, and I caught up with a friend. And he said, he's just like, so they're only letting in 100 people at a time at Home Depot, right? But he's one of those people that's just like, oh, stay at home, quarantine.
He's,
you know,
a by the rules guy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So he goes to Home Depot. He's like, I'm waiting in line, and they're only letting in 100 people, and the line is all the way around like the corner, and the parking lot is entirely full. I'm like, well, yeah, dude. Where have you been?
It's like a concert.
Yeah.
It's the only thing anybody can get into. It's so asinine. The mask is the most asinine. Not in your case, Fassetti, but typically, you know, if you're feeling fine. But again, I would expect in ordinary circumstances, if you're violently ill, you're not going to Home Depot. I would trust on balance people that are violently ill are not looking at patio furniture. I want to believe that's true. Now, maybe there are, yes, it's true, there are people in our midst who just, I don't know, apparently feel like they just want to soldier on and do, you know, go out and do, go about their daily lives violently ill. I don't know many of them. I mean, being ill typically, you know, your typical human response to being ill is I'm going to stay at home and lay down until I feel better. The typical human reaction to being ill is not I'm going to go hard charging out and run around and, you know, licking things and touching things and giving people hugs. Most people on balance are courteous about this. The Health and Human Services Secretary was asked about this by Jake Tapper over the weekend. Alex Azar, aren't you worried? Aren't you concerned about all these people out there on the boardwalk not socially distancing? Secretary Azar, aren't you? We see these pictures of people out there close together. And he said, Jake, I don't know how to break this to you, but again, I'm paraphrasing here. But this is basically what he was saying. We're a free country, Jake. And free people move freely in a free country. And yeah, there are going to be people who are not taking a lot of thought or precaution or care about their daily moving. And then there are going to be people that are going to be hypersensitive to it and worried about it. But that's the way it goes. See, in Jake Tapper's world, no one should ever be on the boardwalk. And if anybody's on the boardwalk, only Jake should be allowed to walk on the boardwalk. Like if Jake is seen on the boardwalk, everybody else must get off the boardwalk. This is Jake Tapper's boardwalk time. Only him. You know, 12 feet in both directions. I say, Jake, that's not the way it's going to go. And you people on the news aren't going to get your way on this thing. They demand people not congregate. They demand it. And wherever they see it, they tisk, tisk, and they panic, and then they float out some phony stat like they did this morning. Texas seeing a rise in cases. No, Texas is seeing a rise in testing. Aren't you worried about people out there on the boardwalk bumping into each other? Aren't you worried about... I stood and talked to a neighbor in the garden center of Lowe's yesterday. I'm not sure we were the required 6 feet apart. We both had idiotic masks on. And I finally took it off. I'm talking to... I finally just took the thing. I'm not doing this. You know, you walk out the garden center because there's ferns out front. I keep saying ferns because that's literally what we bought yesterday. There were ferns out in front. Like, you had to go out into kind of the parking lot space, that kind of the apron in the front of the building, you know, where they put the tractors and a lot of the plants and stuff. But it's outside the gate of the garden center. That's considered inside. Well, they're only letting you in through, I think this is probably the case across the country, so everybody understands this if you've been. You go through the main door of the Lowe's or Home Depot, and then you can walk through the store and into their garden center. You cannot enter the garden center, as you might typically. You got to go through the front door and through the store and out into the garden center, and then you can exit the garden center, but you can't enter the garden center. So we're standing there in the checkout line in the garden center. 10 feet ahead of me are ferns that my wife wants. And I say, why don't you go grab a couple of those ferns so the lady can ring us up here? She was tackled by SWAT the minute she walked out the gate to get the ferns, because once you're outside the gate, you're not allowed to return back in, don't you see? It's that stupid. We're standing in line. She moves 10 feet through a gate to get two ferns and tries to come back. Ma'am! 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 Drop your ferns! Down! 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 Drop your ferns! But my husband's right. I just left the line. I'm 10 feet. I'm right there. You need to go through the other entrance! By the way, people are getting extremely stressed out who have to do this for a living.
I'm too violent for COVID. I can't be out and about like that. Like, luckily, I'm just working all the time, so it's like... If that were me, man, it's just like, well, I'm walking back in, okay?
Well, and finally she said, but we were right, my husband, and I waved, and she, okay, they did let her. But, I mean, it was a thing, because you're only supposed to enter in the one area. We're outside. We're outside. If I have to see one more jackwagon in the out-of-doors with gloves and masks walking alone on us, I saw someone in gloves and a mask walking down the sidewalk in town alone yesterday. Alone. And I said to my wife, that has to stop. I feel duty-bound as a citizen to pull over and demand that stop. That person has to be broken of the terror. And she said, oh, Winna, you don't know. You don't know if they're not, you know, maybe they're immunocompromised. I said, even so, if they're that sick and susceptible to illness, if they're truly that sick, they ought to be in a hyperbaric chamber in the hospital, not walking down the street in town. But to my point, Phil Murphy, even the governor of New Jersey, said, well, you know, we don't mind people out there down ashore, you know, at the beach. We don't mind people on fishing charters, and we don't mind people renting boats and jet skis and stuff like that. We're fine with that because that's out of doors, he said. Ventilation. And I thought, well, hallelujah. Some common sense has prevailed with the governor of New Jersey. I know some of you in New Jersey may not feel that way, but Tom Wolf sure as hell doesn't see it. The governor of Pennsylvania shows no signs of letting up. And let me tell you something. I've got this Axios story in front of me today. It's headlined, The Way Biden Could Win. White House political director during President Clinton's successful reelection race, a guy named Doug Sosnick. Now he's writing for Axios, and he's analyzed the way he thinks Biden can win the presidency. And he's zeroed in on two or three state combos that'll be a lock for President Joe Biden 2020 this fall. It won't surprise you, I won't bury the lead, that Pennsylvania is one of them. But I have some thoughts on that coming up that I want to share with you. I'll probably get into it after 7 o'clock today. Our conversation with the president from Friday is on the way. If you didn't get to hear it, we enjoyed it, thought you might want to hear it either again or for the first time. Bernie Comfort is with us today, too, from the Pennsylvania GOP. I want to talk to the PA GOP about their way forward this fall. Not had a lot of scrutiny, to be completely candid, the Pennsylvania Republican Party. And I want to know, are you guys going to capitalize on this? Are you going to properly make hay while the sun shines, as they say? So that's coming up at 7 o'clock. Mike Terzai at 7:30. Alex Berenson, our pal, is back at 8 o'clock. We're going to comb through the latest data and statistics of COVID because he is a truth teller.
Drive home with me, Sebastian Gorka, this afternoon at 3 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Here's Chris DeGaulle.
It's an honor now to welcome for the first time to Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Mr. President, it's an honor to have you this morning. Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's an honor to be on your show. I was nearby yesterday in Allentown, and we had a tremendous time, and tremendous people lined up along the streets, a tremendous amount of people lined up along the streets. It was incredible to see, actually. Pennsylvania's in good shape, and you have a governor that doesn't want to let people out of their houses, or whatever you want to say, because it's not a good situation. There's a lot of anger.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Our Governor Tom Wolf says, in fact, Pennsylvania citizens are cowards, Mr. President, because they want to go back to work. What would you say to him about that? We're cowards.
Well,
for wanting to go back.
Right. It's incredible that it's one thing to be strong on this, and I'm all in favor of it. And, you know, I'm the one, we have certain guidelines, we have certain rules and regulations. The governors can pretty much override it if they want. And if we see something egregious, we'll override them. We'll be very strong on it. But, you know, you have large portions of your state where they're not affected or badly affected. And you have to be able to do something about it. You have to be able to have a little flexibility. What they're doing in Pennsylvania is really, it's too much. It's too much. People have to get on with their lives. You know, people are dying this way, too. When you do that, when you look at drugs and drug overdoses and you look at suicides and you look at all of the problems, people losing their job, you have to show a little flexibility. And he has really, I don't know what happened to him, but I guess that's why you're going to be voting for a Republican next time, perhaps.
Sir, isn't this a state-by-state leadership issue? I mean, this really is federalism. This is leadership by the governors on trial right now, and you've been careful to keep it that way, I think.
Well, I've helped them a lot, and without that, none of them would be doing well. Without what I've done, nobody likes to say it in the media because it doesn't play well. You know, it's not the narrative they like, but we've sent thousands and thousands of ventilators. We had to go into the ventilator production business because when I took over from Obama, the cupboards were bare. So we sent them, we made ventilators. We have the best testing system in the world, but the media refuses to acknowledge it. We've tested more, Chris. We've tested more in terms of our country than any other country in the world. It's not even close. And now you can take every country in the world, take their testing, and you can add it all together, combine every country in the world. We're over 10 million tests. And we have more than any country in the world now combined, all countries combined. And the media just can't write it. They just can't. They don't want to write it. The only way I get it out is to when I speak to you or when I speak to some of our good friends out there. And they know it and they say it, but I can also say it. So it's a sad thing. It's really sad what the way it's covered. Look at the way the Flynn situation is being covered. What a disgrace that is, that whole thing, what they've done to that man. It's a disgrace. So we talk about it and we get the word out.
Yeah, and I want to get to the General Flynn situation in a moment. I would ask you, Mr. President, to people, you understand this. I mean, we've heard a lot of awful things about this virus, and there are people I respect who are afraid. But I think there are politicians who are saying things like, we can't go back to normal until the virus is eradicated or we find a vaccine. Do you find that to be a political move now?
Well, that was started about 2 days ago, and they talk about vaccine, and of course we want to find a vaccine. But, you know, there's always possibilities that that doesn't happen. I think it's a small possibility. I think we're going to have a vaccine by the end of the year or close to that, and maybe sooner. I mean, we're doing really well on vaccines. And on therapeutics, we're doing well. You understand therapeutics. That's, I don't know, to me, I'd even rather have that because I would take care of people now as opposed to, you know, down the road.
Yes.
But no, I think we're going to have a vaccine. But now they're saying they said, oh, our country will never come back. Well, it will come back, and they'll have maybe flare-ups, and maybe they won't, by the way. But, you know, I've had people say, maybe you won't. Once it's put out, it'll be put out. And it'll be put out, and when it's gone, it's, you know, vaccine, in theory, might not be necessary. We've had other things. They never found a vaccine. And you look at SARS, you look at the H1N1, or as Biden would say, he reverses it. You know, he says N1, H1. I said, that's not right, is it? They said, no, sir, it's not. But, you know, basically the swine flu. So we've had, cases where that just doesn't work out.
Yes.
And it doesn't work out. And they never have a vaccine, and it, you know, hasn't come back. So all of a sudden they're starting this new political dialogue. Oh, we have to find. I mean, basically they're saying our country will never be back until we have a vaccine. That's not true. Now, a vaccine is a topping on the cake. But we're going to have, and more than that, but we're going to have a vaccine. But we're making tremendous strides, really tremendous strides. But no, our country will be back without the vaccine also.
Mr. President, your life and business experiences, your background, I can imagine that's the only thing that's helped you navigate what was an that you led. I was with you when you championed the tax cuts a couple of years ago.
You were. That's right.
Explosive growth, and then you had to come to the country and say, we have to shut it all down. What's your background that informs you through something that is this historic? I mean, you know this is 100 years at least since we've seen something like this.
Well, first of all, it's the biggest decision of my life because we built the greatest economy in history of the world, not just of the United States. It was our greatest economy ever. And I was riding, and it was beautiful. And you'd get into that office, and it was just a question of how many jobs would we create today. It was the greatest we've ever built, the best stock markets ever, best numbers ever, most number of businesses. Place was like, it was absolutely incredible. I kept saying, I hope anything doesn't happen. And then one day I hear about the plague coming in, right? The plague coming in from China, gift from China. And I say, what's this all about? And then, you know, the next, and I actually, the best decision I made, frankly, was closing the borders to China, closing up people coming in from China. If we didn't do that, we would have had hundreds of thousands of more people dead. Even Fauci said that. Hundreds of thousands of more people would have died. And then I closed coming from Europe into the United States. But, you know, it is a very, very vicious enemy. We call it the invisible enemy. It's a vicious enemy. And we're doing a great job. But it's something like hasn't been seen. You said it, 1917, there's been nothing like this ever. It's a contagion, level of contagion, et cetera. But it was a very tough decision. So we have this incredible economy, and now what happens? It's closing. We have to close it. Sir, you'll have to close. I said, what are you talking about, close? Well, sir, you'll have to close. And I said, what the heck? And, you know, we start doing research, and we start seeing that's the best. Now, I tell you what, had we not done that, we would have had perhaps millions of people die.
Yes.
So figure that if we're at 80 and going up to 100 probably, or maybe more, but it's in that, so that would be one person's too many. Just one person's too many, Chris. But if you think, so if we're at 80, now take the 80 and going up, but take that, and instead of being at 80, you'd be at, let's say, 1.6 million. Now, that's a low number. So multiply the 80 times many times, and that's what it would be unacceptable. Both politically, it would be unacceptable. It would be unacceptable from any standpoint, including a human life standpoint. It would have been unsustainable also. People would be imagine, as bad as it looks now, where hospitals where you'll see 11 bodies and body bags laying in a hallway in a hospital in Queens, as an example, in New York. You see these hospitals, and you'll have a hospital. Multiply that times 15 or 20, because that's the kind of difference in numbers you're talking about. So we did the right thing. Now we have to. Now we've learned about it.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned about distancing. We've learned about a lot of things. And now we have to open up. Now, with all of that being said, most people are very routinely affected, especially young people. So
yes,
we know that, you know, a big portion of this is senior citizens, especially in homes, you know, senior citizen houses, residences are incredibly affected, you know, very delicate. But young people are very, very, they look to have a very strong immune system. I guess that's the way it's supposed to be. And they fight it off. We have to open our schools. We have to get our schools open in the fall. And we will do that, and you know, et cetera. But we made the right decision, but it's a very hard thing, and it was the toughest decision I've ever had to make. It was the right decision, but now we have to open our country up. We have to. The people can't take this. The people are not going to stand for it, and I understand it. And you want to open it up safely, and there could be some real bad hot spots where you don't do that, and there are.
Yes.
But we have to take care of, we have to open our country up. We have to get back to business. You break the country, and you break the people.
Mr. President, will Joe Biden leave his basement? Are you going to let him out of his basement to campaign? He says he's a Scrantonian, you know. He's got a headquarters here in Philadelphia, but he hasn't come out of his basement in Delaware yet, Mr. President.
Well, I hope he leaves, because people have to understand what's going on there. You know, you can't have a candidate running from the basement. In fact, even the earplug where they're telling him what to say, and he's getting confused. He's sort of pulling his earplug out because they're screaming in his ear, "You said the wrong thing." And now he's an unmasker like so many others. That whole thing, it's the biggest political scandal in the history of our country. And fake news at CNN and MSDNC, as I call it, they don't want to cover it. They used to spend their entire, if they had an hour program, the entire hour was devoted to General Flynn. And now that he's been exonerated and he's got a very tough thing going on with that court, I'll tell you what, that court, nobody's seen anything like that. There's a whole story brewing there.
This is
that beautiful story.
Mr. President, Rand Paul said it best. You have been accused of what we now know literally the Obama administration did to you, abused their power and spied on American citizens, including your campaign, and disrupted your
100%.
Presidency. Yeah, it's stunning.
Right. So remember when I said that years ago? I said, you know, I've been spied on, right? I've been wiretapped or whatever the expression. Everyone went crazy. They said, how ridiculous, how horrible. I was right. Everybody says, you know, Trump was right. And now you're looking at the unmasking where it looked like everybody in Washington was unmasking Flynn and probably other people, because I have a feeling that what came out is going to be peanuts by comparison to what you're going to see.
Do you feel, I know you have to run, I get a lot of people that ask me and knew you were coming on, do you feel the prayers of the people who love you and are rooting for you out there? Do you feel it? Does that help you through what has got to be an incredibly thankless, difficult time?
Well, it was It's very difficult. And, you know, we've accomplished so much. You know, when you look at tax cuts and regulation cuts, I've rebuilt the military. We just created Space Force. We created a new force, first in 80 years, you know, first new force in 80 years, not since the Air Force. And so many other things. And we've done so much for health care. We got rid of the individual mandate, which was the worst thing in that crazy Obamacare, which we'd love to get rid of that and give you great health insurance. We were one vote short of that. We almost did it, but we'll be able to do it. And all of pre-existing conditions, by the way, will be totally covered by the Republicans, totally. We won't do anything unless pre-existing conditions are fully covered. But, you know, we've done so much, and yet I had to work for years under this cloud of fake. It was just a con job. The whole thing was a hoax. Nobody's ever seen anything. There has never been, and now it's coming out. And you know, these shows that covered Flynn, like as an example, all day long, all day, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk. They don't even want to cover it. And, you know, it's just incredible to actually to see. I was just saying Fox and Friends, they're covering it very well. You cover it great. A different type of show covers it great. But CNN, MS, DNC, all of these other places, many of these other places. New York Times, they're the worst journalists in history, I think. They'll go down, and the Washington Post equally. Those two newspapers, they got Pulitzer Prizes, and they got everything wrong. This Pulitzer Commission has got to be a phony deal. They should take those prizes away. Somebody should sue them, because they shouldn't be giving prizes. They got Pulitzer Prizes, and they spent 3 years covering everything totally wrong. Now, people should get Pulitzer Prizes, but it's not them. It's the other people.
Mr. President, NFL football, I know you're a fan. This is my last question. Football, Temple football, Penn State football, the Steelers, the Eagles. Will we see football this fall?
Well, I hope so. And I'm talking to Roger Goodell. I'm talking to a lot of people, and we want it back. And maybe they'll start back with a little bit lesser, fans in the stands a little bit. And they'll start building up. But look, I went to an Alabama LSU game last year, and I never saw anything. They had 110,000 people. I don't want to see that game with 20,000 people in the stands. Neither does anyone else. I mean, we want to get it back to where it was. We want to get it back to where it was, and that's what's going to happen. And that's with or without a vaccine. We're going to have a vaccine, but that's with or without a vaccine. It'll go away, and we want it to go away. In the meantime, it's a tiny percentage of people that are affected. You know, people don't realize that. It's a tiny percentage. And you can really target it to older people. Older people, especially older people that have a bad heart or older people with diabetes. Yes. You know, they're in trouble with respect to this one. And what you do is those people should stay in. The school's open. If they have an older teacher or professor, he ought to take a number of weeks beyond what the period is. Stay out. Because they are affected. But most other people are not.
Mr. President, we're praying for you. We're honored to have you today, sir. Thank you for your time.
Well, I'm honored. And thank you for everything, Chris. And I'll see you soon.
Yes, sir.
Take care of yourself. Thanks.
That's the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Tried to get as much in there as we could. Those are tough, you know. I still took more. I took more time than we were allotted. I think they're going to be mad at me.
I think you're okay. It was the president who said it was okay.
You know what is awful? I never mean to be disrespectful, but the thing is, when we do these, right, they line him up in a way that he's going to do a few.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And the people that arrange these things work tirelessly to make it happen. And then jabberjaws like me, they've got to try to keep to a certain time length.
Right.
But I'm duty-bound to try to keep them as long as I possibly can without completely ruining their day. Oh, this is good news. The first strip club in the country is reopened in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's called The Den, Fast Eddie. You want to know their slogan?
Oh, boy.
Now that they're reopened? I'm not making this up. Masks on, clothes off.
That's got cachet.
Peggy Noonan has a remarkable piece in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend that I typically wouldn't spend a segment reading an entire piece, but this is one you need to hear if you haven't read it. I'm going to be sharing it with you coming up after 7 o'clock.
Not a moment for excuses or deflections or blame game. We're in the middle of a pandemic that had cost us more than 85,000 jobs as of today. Lives of millions of jobs.
Millions.
You know, and we're in a position where, we just got new unemployment insurance this morning. Numbers.
What?
36.5 million claims since this crisis began.
Is he drunk?
And almost 3 million new claims in the last week. The unemployment rate is nearing 15%, the highest it's been since the Great Depression. But I need not tell you all that.
No, you don't.
Of course, it's the least well-off or being hit the hardest. 40% of the households making $40,000 or less experienced a job loss.
Oh, boy. From his basement, his bunker in Wilmington, Delaware. That's the former Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, who wants to be president. And there is thinking at Axios that very simple math will get him there. I've got that coming up. I won't bury the lead and tell you that one of the states, of course, Axios has, the guy writing for Axios, a guy named Doug Sosnick, White House political director for President Clinton. He's writing in Axios that Pennsylvania is one of the states. He's cobbled together two or three different scenarios. Of course, Pennsylvania always one of them. They think Pennsylvania is going to be easily picked off by Biden. I want you to know, the American left has assumed that Pennsylvania is gone, that Trump doesn't stand a prayer. Now, we were told that certainly before. We've heard that before. Trump didn't stand a prayer with Mrs. Clinton either. What was she up in Pennsylvania at one point in the closing days? If I remember, it was double digits in some polls.
Yeah, it was close. It was like 6, and then it just started to take away.
Yeah. I mean, like, it jumped precipitously.
Yeah.
And that was, when you had your 538 blog, your Nate Silver saying there was no chance in hell. That's kind of where they are again. Anyway, we've got the PA GOP chair coming up next. Sit tight.
You live here. He lives here.
Hey, Chris, thanks for being there and everything you do on a daily basis. We really appreciate it.
Chris, I agree with your other callers. You are a godsend.
You have a mixture of sense of humor, intelligence, and godliness. You are the answer.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Well, I think they should vote their heart. And if they believe Tara Reid, they probably shouldn't vote for me. I wouldn't vote for me if I believed Tara Reid.
Huh? A little past 7 o'clock. If you believe what that lady's saying about me, I wouldn't vote for me either. The problem is, Joe, you have committed liberals out there who have openly written and tweeted they believe Tara Reid, but they hate Donald Trump so much, they're going to vote for you anyway. What does that say? That literally Democrats are saying aloud, I believe her, Joe. I think you are gropey and handsy and inappropriate. I'm still voting for you, though, just because I hate Trump. Wow, that's not exactly a winning message. And then, Biden's out there saying, well, if you believe her, you shouldn't vote for me. That's pretty terrible, the stuff she's saying. Yeah. Anyway, here to discuss it in Pennsylvania, where, of course, all eyes are affixed as they... Well, I won't say they usually are. Donald Trump is the one who made eyes affixed on Pennsylvania. Typically in a presidential, you wouldn't look at Pennsylvania until Trump rolled around. Bernie Comfort is with us, the co-chair of the Pennsylvania GOP. And Ms. Comfort, glad to have you with us today. Hi.
Hi, Chris. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm well. I find that just a remarkable comment. And it is true, right? You're hearing from Democrats who say they actually believe him, but they just want rid of Trump, so they'll tolerate the fact that he's kind of rapey.
Well, look, I mean, Democrats' hatred of the president, it has a long history, right? I mean, during the 2016 election, they were already trying to figure out how to impeach him if he won, right? There's Hillary Clinton's staffers on her campaign, their video of that, saying, look, if he wins, this is how we'll impeach him. So, yeah, their hatred of the president is palpable, let's face it.
I'm wondering, Ms. Comfort, if Joe Biden is the opponent this fall or if it's Tom Wolf. And I'm kind of serious about that. I mean, because you know Pennsylvania politics and you're the GOP co-chair. I mean, as much as I think about Biden, the real imminent threat to Pennsylvanians is the fact that we've got a governor that just, I mean, he seems committed as crazed and wild-eyed committed to keeping us in prison and locked in our homes and our businesses not open as anybody. I mean, maybe more so than Biden. I the rage that is simmering, I don't have to tell you, the simmering rage at Tom Wolf is real, more so than at Biden. I'm kind of wondering if that ought not be President Trump's strategy. He was with us, you know, on Friday here on the show, and we talked about that. I think Wolf might be doing more damage to Biden than Biden.
Well, and, you know, look, I mean, it's backfiring, right? I mean, it's no coincidence that the three states that are locked down the most are states that are Democratic governors, right? And so if that's their strategy, if that's the Democrats' strategy, it's certainly backfiring because you're absolutely correct. People are ready to get back to work safely. And that's what we've been saying all along. We're not treating this without a great deal of concern and caution for American people and their safety. I mean, the president showed that that's his number one priority. Number two is getting our economy back and running. So, yeah, Governor Wolf has applied different standards to himself. The Secretary of Health has applied different standards to her mother, moving her mother out of a nursing home, you know, quietly while telling everybody else what to do with their loved ones, right? So Governor Wolf has definitely put himself right in the middle of the mix here. I agree with you, Chris.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I don't understand in terms of fundraising or campaigning. Like, what are the Democrats running around? I mean, to the extent that they're running around, no one's running around. But what's the Democrats' message? What are they saying to voters in Pennsylvania right now? And I'm sincere. I don't know what the right. I see all these yard signs that say vote by mail, vote Democrat, vote by mail.
That seems to be their only battle cry, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're saying. And back to the hatred point, you know, because certainly they're not speaking to Pennsylvanians. I mean, Joe Biden's talking about taking away 370,000 energy-related jobs. That does not speak to Pennsylvanians, you know, putting, you know, AOC and Bernie Sanders in charge of the Green Deal and, you know, his environmental policies. And so, you know, they're not speaking to Pennsylvanians, you know, whether it's Governor Wolf, whether it's Joe Biden, you know, whether it's AOC. So I don't know, other than telling them to vote by mail, you know, this primary, I'm not really hearing any significant messages that are moving Pennsylvanians towards their nominee.
Yeah, Bernie Comfort with us, the PA GOP co-chair. The vote by mail thing is an interesting push. A lot of money being spent from the Secretary of State here in Pennsylvania, the yard signs. Anytime I see a coordinated, active, like money spent in something, it's a campaign. It's a full-blown campaign. Money is being spent. Yard signs are being made. Vote by mail. Why?
Sure. Well, look, that's how they want to, you know, that's how they want to steal the election in some ways. You heard Nancy Pelosi talk about, you know, with the stimulus packages, she wasn't talking about what Americans need. She wasn't talking about small business loans, getting people back to work, keeping our small business owners afloat. She was talking about universal vote for mail and her wish list, you know, for Democratic funding. So, you know, vote by mail, they would love an election with all mail-in votes. That's what they're pushing for, you know, in terms of, you know, being able to adjust the results. But they have to look to California. Republicans just won a House seat with vote by mail. So look, we're going to be ready regardless of what they push. But, yeah, I think it's an active campaign because they think that will give them the edge, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, and do you feel confident in the security of vote by mail? I mean, I know people listening to me think that's just rife with fraud. Do Republicans feel like they're going to be able to properly supervise the vote by mail effort?
Look, we're working on that right now. Every day we're working on how we're going to handle, you know, election security. It's certainly a concern. You know, we definitely are not for entirely voting by mail. We're not for, you know, any of the bundling they're suggesting. We're definitely, you know, we have that option. New law, we have the option. There is security there with, you know, your barcodes to track your particular ballot. But we are not looking to go to an all mail in election at all.
What are you seeing in terms of polling? We were just joking that Mrs. Clinton had a double-digit lead on President Trump heading into the closing week of the campaign, we were told, in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And we're hearing similar numbers for Joe Biden right now. What do you know?
Well, you know, I know that the biggest poll is on November 3rd, 2020, and you're absolutely correct, Chris. I mean, if we believe polling from 2016, then we need to get, you know, we need to get a new reality, because we were taught that polling isn't always accurate in 2016. Is it double digits? And Donald Trump is now president, and he won Pennsylvania. So I don't really look to the polls. I look to what's going on the ground. And I can tell you, even amid a coronavirus, that people were beyond excited to see their president here
yes.
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, to me, it's all about, right, excitement. That's the it's axiomatic. It's not enough to hate somebody. You can't be driven by, right. I don't like a guy, to turn people out for your candidate. It's enthusiasm for your candidate, not hatred for right. the other guy. And the enthusiasm for Donald Trump, in my view, is I don't think he's lost anybody that came out for him, is the point. The question is, can Biden draw more people out than Mrs. Clinton, right? That's the question. And at this hour, I'm not sure the Democrats even think so. So, listen, Bernie, we dropped off already. I don't know why, but anyway, that was Bernie Comfort. Didn't hang up on her, I promise, but Ms. Comfort, thanks for your time. I was done anyway. That's Bernie Comfort, the Pennsylvania GOP co-chair. We had a rough connection as it was. Maybe it had come to an end, mercifully. 10 past 7, telephone number 610-850-0990. Mike Terzai on the way at 7:30. He's the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House. And if he's on the same phone, Fast Eddie, just go ahead and pull the gun on me now. It sure is Monday around here, and I'm doing my level best to continue to maintain life-sustaining radio quality. Though with every passing minute, it's getting more challenging. Folks, not going to lie to you, but I'm not going to cry in my beer to you. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Hope you had a great weekend. Thanks a lot for being here. My name's Chris. The radio station is called AM 990 The Answer. I'm thrilled to have you with us. Thank you so much for dialing us up. You can listen online anywhere you are at 990theanswer.com. Hope you'll check out the podcast, which I do every day after the show. I run into the studio. We usually break for about a half an hour or so. And then I get right to work on the podcast every day. I kind of consider it a fourth hour of the show. We get to go a little more in-depth, go a little longer on interviews and things maybe that we have to cut short here. So hope you'll check it out and let me know what you think about it. It's Apple, iTunes, wherever you download podcasts, it's available. I even got a guy ask me, are you going to start making it available on Pandora? I said, I got to look into it because I don't really know what's involved there. I guess I could, but everybody's got their way of listening. Everybody's got their app. Everybody's got their preferred way of downloading a thing. Every time I think we got all the bases covered, we're on Google Play, we're on SoundCloud, we're on Stitcher, we're on Apple iTunes, and then somebody, yeah, but we're on Yoohoo. Am I on what? Yoohoo. Oh, it's the only way. If you're not on Yoohoo, you're wasting everybody's time. Don't even bother me if you're not going to be on Yoohoo. I'm not going to listen if you're not on Yoohoo. Okay, all right, now we're on Yoohoo. Oh, no, but you're not on Nina. What? You got to be on Nina. Everyone who's anyone downloads and streams everything they ever want to listen to on Nina. Okay, we'll look into that.
Yeah, Podomation.
Oh, I've never seen, it's every day there is some new vessel to download and stream your favorite podcast, and I can't keep up with them all. I mean, at some point, I just... And then there are people that say, oh, the only way to listen to any of that stuff is on YouTube. You got to go on YouTube. You got to put it all on YouTube. And I'm like, well, why would you, like, why do, unless there's a video of me doing something, why do you have to listen to the audio on YouTube? Well, it's another way to find you. I said, how many ways do I need to be found?
Right.
I don't know. There are 3,000 ways to download the show or listen to it live right now. How many more do I need? Apparently 3,001.
And every platform, too, has the steps you have to take. So on Spotify, you have to follow. Like, you have to follow the podcast. On Apple, it's what? Like? You have to...
Yeah, make it... Subscribe to it.
Subscribe to it. That's right.
Yeah.
And then, what was the other one I heard? It was like, follow, and then the other one... Oh, yeah, hit the little bell on YouTube so that you get the alarms the and the alerts. Notifications. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I don't even know half of it. I mean, I got a guy that does all that stuff on the backside of everything, so, and I'm glad he does. I pay him to do it so I don't have to think about it. And then somebody will email me and say, well, aren't you on Ha-Ha? Am I on what? On ha-ha. I don't know what that is. Oh, ask your guy. You got to get on ha-ha. All right, I'll ask my guy if we're on ha-ha. See if I can't get that done for you. No spitting or showering in baseball. There used to be just no crying in baseball. Major League Baseball players prohibited from taking showers after games, and there will be no fist-bumping celebrations or spitting in the dugout, according to new return-to-play guidelines drafted by the league. The new restrictions, which have to be approved by the players' union, would also enforce social distancing, meaning no hugs, no high-fives after home runs, a ban on chewing tobacco. This came out Saturday. Players would go through daily temperature screenings, have to sanitize their hand each half inning. MLB plans to perform thousands of tests on players, coaches, management, and stadium personnel for COVID-19 on a weekly basis. Showers would not be permitted at the stadium after games. MLB believes the 67-page return-to-play rules would prevent against the spread of COVID-19 as the league is hoping to reopen for a shortened 2020 season by early July. Players not in the lineup would need to sit in auxiliary seating at a social distance and not in the dugout. Non-playing team personnel would need to wear face coverings in the dugout. Most essential team personnel would be tested for coronavirus more than once a week, as would their family members. Anyone testing positive would immediately be quarantined. So players not in the lineup, that's my favorite part. Players not in the lineup, well, I assume would still have to dress, right? You still dress out if you're not in the lineup. Don't you typically?
Oh, yeah.
You travel, you dress out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess now the auxiliary seating. So that means you'd have Phillies not in the lineup today, sitting what, in the stands with the hot dog guy?
Yeah, maybe they'll
until
be
called up?
Dancing on top of the dugout with the fanatic.
I love the idea of the guy, like they pull somebody and stick another guy in from the lineup. He's got to come down out of the stands, put down his hot dog, right, and dancing with the fanatic on the dugout.
Rhys Hoskins out with a wrist injury, but oh, there he is dancing with the fanatic.
Seventh inning stretch. Oh, this is so strange. I mean, I get it. Whatever makes people feel better. No high fives, no hugs, no fist bumps, no spitting, no showers. Okay. Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. Mike Terzai, the Pennsylvania Speaker of the House, on the way at 7:30. His latest take on what seems to be just an unwillingness, an immobilization of the Wolf administration. They're not doing anything. And I am starting to see, you know, the all-important Pennsylvania housefrau, the suburban housefrau, Fast Eddie. I'm surrounded by suburban housefraus. These are the women that are the most important women, most important people, the most important demographic ever to anyone that ever lived. The suburban housefrau.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is the one that is considered the most nervous, the most alarmed, the most on the bubble. They call them soccer moms or security moms or whatever. It's always the mom, the minivan driving security and or soccer and or suburban, whatever they're called. They're always labeled something every election cycle, but they're always the ones, the most important ones of them all. And all I can tell you is those women, I know I have a direct pipeline to them from my wife, who talks with many of them on social media. And I said to her, I ask her every now and again, I say, well, what are they saying out there on social media? Because she's on it all the time. She boils with rage most of the time these days because she spends too much time on it. And she told me the other day her Democrat voting friend is furious. Furious because she's at her wit's end with her kid who has some specific emotional and educational needs that typically she'd have assistance with through school. But, of course, there's no school and... So that presents a unique set of challenges, but she's also a very athletic person and very active. And so all of this kind of goes against the grain of her entire existence. She's also a loyal, tried and true, not a wingnut. I like this woman very, very much. She's not a wingnut by any stretch, and not a you wouldn't know it if you were talking to her, but unless you ask. She's a partisan Democrat. She's a loyal, voting, partisan Democrat. And talking to my wife about this woman, she said, well, I'll call her Julie. She said, Julie's finally had it. So what do you mean Julie's finally had it? She can't understand and can't believe why this is continuing on with no end in sight. I said, oh, really? I said, oh, yeah, she's mad. She's mad for her son who needs help and can't get it. She's mad because she feels like we've figured out how to do this appropriately, socially distanced, and said at some point we're going to have to just get on. This has gone on too long. She got another traditional left-leaning friend who is in a line of work. I don't want to say too much because this gets too close to home if I'm not careful, but she's in another line of work that's been deeply impacted by this. Still working, but has had the revenue stream has been dramatically sliced. She said, I'll call her Barb. She said, oh, Barb is furious. Barb's mad as she can be. She said, enough's enough. She's going to maybe have to leave this job and go get another, a different kind of work and get out of this line of work if this lockdown doesn't. And I just looked at her and I said, you suppose maybe they're starting to think about how they vote? I'm serious. Do you think these people consider for a minute who's governing the state and making his decisions? Do they think for a minute that this is ideologically driven? Do they look around the country and they see these Republican governors? And I just wonder to myself, do they look around and see these Republican governors who have got their states beginning to open and resuming some kind of normalcy? Do they look at what's going on in Pennsylvania and say to themselves, we're in the wrong party? Or clearly Democrats' priorities are out of whack. They're not mine. Maybe the way I was raised to vote Democrat and my parents who voted Democrat, maybe that's not who we're dealing with anymore. Maybe the party of economic ruin and bringing us to our knees is not the party I want to hang with anymore. Maybe the idea of a party that wants to make me dependent and crush my family's means of earning a living or sending my kid to school, maybe that's not who I want to associate with anymore. I'm genuinely curious. Has it permeated anybody's mind out there yet, Fast Eddie, you think, that maybe voting Democrat is not in their best interest, these loyal Democrats?
I think there's always something that makes me think, it's just like, okay, this is going to do it. Like, you know, Jim Kenney, I always think something is going to happen, and I'm still pessimistic about it changing them. Like, they're still going to vote for someone like Tom Wolf. I just have a bad feeling about that.
Well, this is the other thing that makes my wife kind of drives her crazy. And I don't mean to pick on anybody, but she said she got really mad the other day. Christine has just recently gotten involved in local politics, actively so. Like, she's decided to physically get involved, and she's doing some stuff with her Republican committee and things like that. So, and by her own choice, this is just something she's decided to do. She was of the impression of a couple of years ago. She said, I feel like I've done a lot of just sitting around watching and kind of complaining. If I really mean it, I should probably do something about it. So she's decided to start getting involved. But what that means is she's starting to talk to all these very impressionable suburban house frows, you know, the people who are the bellwether of every election. And I hate to tell you, I'm painting with a broad brush here. I don't mean everyone, certainly. I don't even mean most. I won't even say most. Anecdotally, what's driving my wife crazy is when she sees people on social media say, this Wolf, he's gone too far, this Wolf. And I'll tell you what, when November gets here, you better watch out because I'm going to vote him out. Now, Fast Eddie, what's wrong with that?
Well, this is not a gubernatorial election year.
That's right.
They have plenty of time to forget how awful Wolf was. We're watching CNN on this side, and Fetterman's on. I'm sure he's going to be hopping up there soon for the governorship.
Oh, yeah, the Carhartt jacket and the goatee. Yeah, the lurch. That's the, oh, Lord. Look at him.
There's no gubernatorial election this year.
He's in a Carhartt coat with a brick wall background and a goatee. And again, none of that would be bothersome to me at all if he were, I don't know, coming to play golf with me today or something. But there's just could you just look at all like you care about leading? Could you at least put on a shirt with a collar? You know, I don't even need a tie. Just put on a shirt with a collar, maybe a jacket. Why does he look like he's about to do a grunge? He's like a Daughtry cover band.
But that's the thing, that you'd think that like Krasner would be enough for people to take notice of what's happening locally. I can't remember the Delco guy that won all the Soros funded DAs. You'd think that would be enough.
Well, you know why it's not? Because here's why I think this might be different. And this is why I say to the PA GOP co-chair there, Bernie Comfort, and by the way, just so the PA GOP knows, as long as they want to come on the show, we welcome you, but they've got to use their heads about the way to talk about this, and it starts with this lockdown. I'm sorry, the lockdown is all that matters. In Pennsylvania, the lockdown is all that matters, and I don't mean there's not other stuff going on, and I don't mean we can't walk and chew gum. I don't mean we can't talk about Flynn, and I don't mean we can't talk about Tara Reid, and all. We can talk about those things, but in Pennsylvania, if you want to talk about what matters, you know what you got to do? Who's for restoring normalcy in an economy? Who's for keeping your job? Who's for bringing the economy back and putting money in your pocket? Who's for trying to find a way for your kids to get back to school? Who's for it? And then who has stood in your way? Who is stopping that from happening? And why are they stopping it from happening? That's all and it's starting to get difficult to talk to people about, as I've explained to you before, because if you don't live here, it's foreign to you. I mean, I have friends that, live in all kinds of different states, Kansas, Missouri, Texas, my parents, my family back west and in the Midwest, and they're all texting me pictures. Here we are. We're out to eat, going to the hair salon, going to get my nails done, going out for this, going out for that. Look at us. We're doing everything normal again back. And that's lovely, because here in the Republic of the People's Republic of Pennsylvania, we're not allowed to do squat. Except go to Home Depot and order takeout. And there's just no signs of it letting up. And so, yes, my wife says now there are people starting to get mad. Loyal Democrats are starting to get mad. Well, then the Pennsylvania GOP had better seize on it. They'd better start educating the people who are getting mad, and rightly so. Who is doing this? What is causing this hurt? The guy in the Carhartt with the goatee against the brick background this morning. The Daughtry cover band, Lurch from the Addams Family. Look at that guy. He's literally sitting in a corner of a brick building in a Carhartt jacket with a goatee. It's embarrassing, this guy. I got to take a picture of it just so I can tweet it out, because nobody's watching CNN otherwise. There, I'll tweet that out in a minute. He's in Braddock, Pennsylvania, apparently being held hostage. I've been watching Ozark. He looks like he looks like one of the guys, guys in the Ozarks who is selling heroin and blowing people's heads off. That's our lieutenant governor. What a joke. By the way, nice of him. I mean, I'm glad he's willing to do a talk with Allison Camerota this morning. Has Governor Wolf done one interview with anybody live?
If he has, it's been either overnight or midday.
That's the other thing. And when he does them, he doesn't take questions. They all have to go through his Baghdad Bob, the minister of information there, his right hand. What a joke, this state. And if Pennsylvania Republicans don't pound this shutdown and pound Wolf and Democrats for this shutdown, they're doing it wrong. It's the only thing that matters all the way to November, period, full stop. I don't want to talk about anything else but. He's the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House. Great friend of the show for a number of years, a leading voice in opposition to this lockdown, I'm grateful to say. Mike Terzai is back on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Mr. Speaker, glad to have you back, sir.
Glad to have you back. Hey, thank you so much. Chris, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, Mike. It's frustrating, though. I was just saying in the last segment that I don't think, even Phil Murphy in New Jersey, my gosh, is saying things like, well, if you're outdoors and there's ventilation, we can kind of get our heads around opening up the beaches and the boating and the this and the that. And It's like there's even some hopefulness coming out of Governor Murphy, who I would argue has a more aggressive lockdown than Wolf, but there's just no signs of this guy budging, no urgency, no information, no explanation as to why. I know you're hearing it, so I'm not saying anything you're not already hearing, but what makes this guy tick? What is his MO? What is his end game? He's given us no metrics, has he?
I would just say that the metrics he's using are not that relevant, and he has not adhered to his metrics. Look, the governor's on lockdown, right? I mean, he's not in the Capitol. His staff's not in the Capitol. We're going to be in session again this week, and this is 9 straight weeks we're in session voting and trying to move Pennsylvania in the right direction. And I think it's 10 out of 11 weeks that we've been in session, and we have 3 bills right now on the governor's desk. One, which gives county government the power to fully move into a reopening under Center for Disease Control regulations. Second, one that allows for real estate and related services to be open under safe distancing protocols. And then another that has garden seed stores, retail, curbside, and you can go inside as long as it's meeting safe distancing protocols, and automobile dealerships, amongst other economic activity. We've already fought and won, I would say, on a variety of areas, because I think you look at activity, construction, and a component part of auto sales, and medical procedures and health systems all have been passed, and the governor essentially just, allowed all those activities statewide. It's voluntary, and you can do it safe. And then I would also say that the other crucial component is this. Rivera said he was going to not open schools in the fall, and you saw my letter.
Yes.
And the pushback, and now he's backtracked on that and said schools would likely be open in the fall. We got to keep the pressure on. And finally, I've been calling university and college presidents across the Commonwealth, and I'm going to continue to do so, and say you need to have students back in school in the fall, if not this summer. And I think those kind of pressure, activity by activity, and the return to normalcy under safe condition, under safe, distancing conditions, will do the job, and the governor's made himself almost irrelevant.
Yeah, I kind of wondered, in fact, a friend of mine this weekend sort of asked aloud, Penn State football, State College, no economic activity in State College this fall, go ahead and try it, see how that goes. I mean, that may play here in southeast Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, where there are loyal Democrats who are maybe indifferent to Wolf, but I'd love to see you keep State College closed through football season this fall.
It's interesting, and then I do want to talk to you about our senior protection bill, if you don't mind. But One other thing that I think is crucial, the messaging I'm telling folks is that, out of 4,342 sadly tragic deaths in Pennsylvania, just shy of 3,000 or just shy of 70% were in 3 settings: nursing homes, assisted living residences, and personal care homes. And listen to these percentages, Chris. These are the updated statistics. 4.7% had 5 or more comorbidities. 10.9% had 4 comorbidities. 22% had 3 comorbidities. 23.3% had 2 comorbidities. And 24.1% had 1 comorbidity. Only 10% had 0. Now, I mean, goodness, I feel very sad for each and every one of these families who has lost this loved one. But the reality is that there is a significant part of the population that is not at risk for hospitalization or death. And we need to focus in on these senior settings and should have been focusing in on these senior settings. And my senior protection bill provides federal COVID money that we have received at the state to engage Temple, Penn, Jefferson, down your way, to do a collaborative relationship focusing on infection control, clinical management, and really testing and surveillance, because all these health systems have testing and surveillance capabilities.
Mike Turzay with us. He's the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House. And the nursing home, I would call it scandal. It seems Dr. Levine, since you and I have last talked, is now on trial and the source of national scrutiny because, of course, we know she moved her mother, her elderly mother, out of such a facility way ahead of this thing exploding. And the take was, well, my mother's independent and made that decision for herself. But still in all, I mean, it certainly looks like Dr. Levine was privy to information that maybe the rest of us weren't at the time. As Dr. Levine continued to suggest that COVID-positive elderly folks be sent into the nursing homes, I mean, do we have a nursing home scandal in Pennsylvania? I guess I'll just ask you, Mr. Speaker.
Well, I would just say this. We certainly have a real tragedy, and I think at a minimum, Dr. Levine has to recognize this as a public official. If you are going to take steps, you have to share those steps, particularly if it's reflecting your fear of COVID-19 and you're the person in charge of addressing COVID-19 for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And without a doubt, the consequences of COVID-19 have most significantly and seriously been felt by those folks most at risk. And I think if Dr. Levine was not assessing those particular sets of problems, and if she was assessing those particulars, they needed to be out there early to the public. And I think that the press, legislators, the public would have been zeroed in. Those folks have been locked down, and families have not been able to see them. And I suspect many of the families would have done the same as Dr. Levine.
Mike, do you find it unprecedented? I still am stunned. Is it unprecedented? I think this is the right word for it, unprecedented. The fact that this Yes. governor will not take live press conference questions. I've never heard of this in my, and it just keeps going on unabated with no real meaningful challenge from the media, which also stuns me. I mean, the media doesn't play patty cake with you, but for some reason they'll just roll yeah. over and let this go on and on and on with Wolf.
Absolutely not. There's at least with a certain segment of the media, if this were a Republican governor, if this were Tom Corbett,
oh my gosh,
and he was not doing press events, it would be the front page of every paper. There has been no challenge whatsoever in any significant manner. Where are the headlines? Where's the outcry?
When Tom Corbett, Mike, if I may, I remember when Tom Corbett came into town just to have town halls on public education. They greeted him with protests and screaming and heckling, and they'd mob these town halls with people shouting and screaming him down. Wolf just stays in his house and takes no questions, and nobody seems to care. I've never seen anything like this.
You know, I'm not one prone to hyperbole, but for those who have never read Animal Farm by George Orwell, you know, some persons are equal, but some are more equal, right? I mean, that's ultimately what happens. And it's interesting that the left here has really not, in my humble opinion, scrutinized the actions here. We're really beyond the stage where the arguably applicable statute, I think, has had a shelf life. You don't get to make unilateral or autocratic decisions in a crisis forever. You know, maybe you have to do it to make some important decisions at the get-go. And I would argue that many of the important decisions at the get-go were facilitated by the legislature. We were the ones who focused on personal protection equipment and manufacturing some of that product in Pennsylvania so that we weren't reliant on brokers getting counterfeit product and at exorbitant rates, ultimately from supply chains in China.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, this zeroing in and coming up with a solution on how we best protect those individuals in nursing homes, personal care homes, and assisted living is it has been the legislature. We'll be moving legislation this week that ties the academic medical centers into providing the levels of expertise and help in that direction. One other thing, what's unnerving to me and sad to me is the administration and some of the officials throughout the state, like where I am in Allegheny County, which is, you know, the county that Pittsburgh sits in, they're taking away kids' dreams. Kids can safely play Little League, softball, and baseball. They can safely do swim team activities. They can safely do track and field activities. And you can social distance the parents or the crowds, but to take, or and let me just say this, you could do outdoor musical activities and art shows. You can do this all safely. Go do it outside.
Yeah, Governor Murphy of New Jersey seems to agree with that and agree with you. Seems to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's
saying.
Ohio
is too. It's both. Yeah. Look, the most important thing, I'm older and we have to be, you know, it's even the average. The last statistic I saw, and this may have changed, was that the average age of somebody that had passed away was 79 and that the median age I had heard was 84. These young people have to be able to pursue their lives and their dreams, and parents are and grandparents are aspirational. We live through our families. That's how most people live, you know, and that's for every economic, you know, that's from people of all backgrounds, you know, no matter what your background is, that's where you are.
Mike, I appreciate your time, as always. I hope we can have you back again very, very soon. June 4th is the date now the governor has set. Do you have any reason to... I mean, I just don't anymore. I don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. I think June 4th becomes June 15th in a blink. I hate to say it, but maybe.
I don't want to ascribe... You know, you have to just look at the facts, right? But we moved the primary from April 28th to June 2nd. And then... this goes through June 4th. Like, why wouldn't it be through Memorial Day? I mean, what's the magic about June 4th?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like being skeptical in those regards. I want to trust people and their intentions and move forward on public policy and have it articulated and discuss it. And we have a once a week call that we insisted upon as leaders that they're not, you know, that in depth. I did ask for a call on, the 1.8 million Pennsylvanians that have filed for unemployment, compensation, which is frightening. And a lot of calls are not getting done. People aren't seeing their checks. Chris, that's 26.1% of our workforce.
Stunning.
I my wife and I, and I haven't said this on a show, but, you know, we've been, like many, I mean, there's a lot of good Pennsylvanians. I do it as a citizen, and it's my wife who makes sure we go. But we've been helping out in a neighboring Catholic church. Our church sponsors some other churches, and, it's so sad. Like, it's a burden on all of us, and if we're not pushing back, I feel like history will not judge us favorably, no matter what the media says.
I agree. This has to be the only issue for the next 4 months to November. I hate to talk about it politically, but you have to. This has to be the issue in November. I mean, there's nothing else to talk about in Pennsylvania but what Governor Wolf has done, as far as I'm concerned. And every Democrat has to atone for it and explain it and defend it. I think every Democrat should be put on notice and be forced to defend this madness. It's the only issue. 26% of Pennsylvanians unemployed, poverty rampant, no signs of optimism or help or hope. And we're going to feel this for the rest of the year. It's the only issue for Pennsylvania Republicans, as far as I'm concerned. Sir, I got to run, but I appreciate your time, Mike.
Oh, Chris, you're great to have me on. Thank you for having me on your show, and my best to your listenership in the Philadelphia area.
Likewise, sir. We'll have you back very, very soon. That's the Speaker of the House, Mike Turzai, on a Monday morning. Glad to have him. Coming up just after the news here at 8 o'clock, the former New York Times reporter, now prolific blogger, podcast host, and I think all-around intrepid, great journalist, Alex Berenson. He's been a favorite of this show, and if you don't follow him on Twitter, if you are a Twitter user and you don't follow him, you should start. AlexBerenson.com is his website as well. Look, bottom line is, this is a nursing home crisis, as Mike Torzai effectively confirmed, and it was caused by several blue state governors, including our own. Cuomo, for instance, in New York, poured this into nursing homes in New York. The numbers would look much different if you had extracted sick people from nursing homes and put them in isolated care facilities somehow. Anyway, I mean, even if you want to take Pennsylvania out of it for a minute, they brought in a ship, the Comfort, you know, there to the harbor in New York, and they set up the Samaritan's Purse tents in Central Park. Move them there. Move the elderly COVID patients there. Isolate them, contain them, quarantine them. But instead, what do? We do have a nursing home crisis. And Dr. Levine, our Secretary of Health, cousin it, she took her mother out just in time. This is a nursing home crisis. This is a blue state governor crisis on trial.
You live here. He lives here.
Well, 990 has me for good now. I, like the other caller, used to listen to you on that other station.
Chris, so glad you're back on the air. You're the best in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I enjoy your show very, very much.
Great show as usual.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
See President Obama.
More than anything, this pandemic has fully, finally torn back the curtain on the idea that so many of the folks in charge know what they're doing. A lot of them aren't even pretending to be in charge. If the world's going to get better, it's going to be up to you. With everything suddenly feeling like it's up for grabs, this is your time to seize the initiative. Change requires strategy, action, organizing, marching, and voting. In the real world, like
you can't organize, march, or vote, you dummy. Hey, dope, we're not allowed to organize, march, and vote unless you missed it. Maybe you did miss it. Maybe there in your, what is it, Nantucket, his new home that he bought there on the coast, you know, because of global warming and the rising seas and all that. You can't organize and march. And by the way, he's talking to high school seniors, graduating seniors. Where the hell are they going to go to school? In Pennsylvania, we're in lockdown. You can't organize and march in a lockdown, you dope. And, of course, the implication, nobody knows what they're doing. Look, Dr. Birx, I just put this up on my Facebook page. I hope you'll read it from Business Insider. Dr. Deborah Birx said, "There is nothing from the CDC that I can trust." Now, that's an astounding statement. Nothing from the CDC that I can trust. Dr. Deborah Birx, White House Coronavirus Task Force Response Coordinator, blasted the Center for Disease Control and Prevention during a discussion on COVID-19. This came from the Washington Post over the weekend. "There is nothing from the CDC I can trust," she told CDC Director Robert Redfield. Two people familiar with the meeting told the newspaper. Now, again, these are people in the room, sources say, kind of comments. So I'm not saying they're gospel. But if this is true, I'd sure like to know. This is the kind of question I'd like to have directed to the White House Coronavirus Task Force. By the way, Kaylee McEnany was fantastic. I got to play for you some of Kaylee coming up from Friday's White House press briefing. If you didn't hear her, she is, oh man, what a hire they made in her. I got a couple. But the Washington Post reporting that Dr. Birx, now remember, Dr. Birx is considered, I think, maybe not after this story, but up to this point, Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci were considered irrefutable, right? Aren't they on the same team? Like, the American left loves Dr. Fauci, for sure, we know. And I think Dr. Birx is still in good standing with the American left.
As of today, yes.
They were authorities. Yeah. Like, they were in fact, remember the Zapruder-like analysis of Dr. Birx's face the day that they tried to make the big scandal out of Trump suggesting we inject cleaner into our veins? Remember when that was a thing for half a second? That was a real story. For days, the media tried to make you think that the president was standing up there at the White House podium suggesting people inject Lysol directly into their veins. Mainline cleaner. And they took, remember the shot? I don't know if you saw this or not. Dr. Birx was sitting off to the side in one of the chairs, kind of on the side. They had this slow panning camera and a tight zoomed in shot of Dr. Birx's face kind of staring at the floor. And the implication was that while Trump had just completely derailed and told the nation to mainline cleaner, Dr. Birx had just had it. And in horror, in resigned horror, she just looked at the floor. Well, now here she is saying she can't trust anything the CDC is saying. At least this, that's a Washington Post quote. So, tell you what we'll do. I'm going to bring in our old buddy Michael Berenson, who's been very, very, Alex, what's wrong with me? It's Monday. Alex Berenson is back with us on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Hey, Alex, good morning to you. I just renamed you. Hope you don't mind.
Hey Chris. No, it's all right. Sometimes people call me John Berenson because of John Wells, the hero in my book.
Yes. How you been?
I've been good. I've been like the rest of us. I've been locked down. How are you?
Oh, buddy. I'm fine. You know, we're here in the People's Republic of Pennsylvania, where our governor just blew. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day that the Democrat governor in New Jersey would be less heavy-handed than the Democrat in Pennsylvania, but somehow we're there. And I was actually, I'll open with this. And I might need to take a break and come back with you if you don't mind, Alex. But sure. If you have the time this morning, I don't know.
I'm a bit swamped, but let's talk as much as we can.
Yeah, we got a little off target here off the top. So Dr. Birx, according to the Washington Post, said there is nothing from the CDC that I trust. Birx and others reportedly fear the CDC and their tracking system has been inflating coronavirus stats like death rates and case numbers. We know that here in Pennsylvania, our health director continues to quibble with how they're counted and whether they'll delineate between nursing homes and the general population and whether you're asymptomatic or symptomatic. Do those things matter to you as a journalist?
Of course they matter. You know, we've known since the beginning that that we're counting deaths in a very aggressive way. And, you know, now it looks like if you look at Colorado, they just specifically broke out deaths where the person, you know, supposedly died of coronavirus. And again, that could be somebody who was quite sick, who, you know, sort of at the end of his life anyway, you know, with cancer or some other terminal illness, and then got coronavirus and died, you know, a few days more quickly than he or she might have. And okay, you know, I think there's an argument to be made about whether that's a coronavirus death or a death from an underlying illness. But then there's this whole different set of deaths where people definitely did not die from coronavirus, but died with coronavirus. And the classic example of this is in Colorado, where a person basically drank himself to death. His blood alcohol was about twice the level at which people die, and he had the infection, and he was listed as a coronavirus death.
Deaths
should not be counted as coronavirus deaths. Clearly, they have nothing to do with coronavirus.
Just as a side, Alex, I love listening to a dad with a dog in the morning. I just love it. You're juggling a baby and a dog there this morning. That's a working man.
It's totally true. And my wife, you know, she's a physician and she treats these patients, and so she's about to go to work. So the fact that I'm on a live radio interview, you know, makes no difference to her.
No, I love it.
She's got a real job to do.
No, this is what makes morning radio gritty. I've always loved that. Sincerely.
I think there's a real question about the counting right now. And, you know, the people who are saying that the deaths are undercounted, I mean, that does not seem to be the case at all anymore. The question seems to be how much overcounting there is. And I don't think we know that. And by the way, there are definitely people who really died from this, a significant number of them. You can see it in the excess mortality numbers in places like New York and, you know, and Northern Italy. But that does not mean that that the numbers the CDC is giving us can be trusted.
So, I mean, MSNBC, literally right now, CDC estimates more than 100,000 deaths by June 1st. So,
that's a scary sounding number. How old were those people? How many of those people had severe underlying medical conditions and would have died this year anyway? How many of those people died really with it, as in that example of the person who drank himself to death? We don't know. What we do know is that if you're under, you know, under 50, under 60 even, and don't have a lot of underlying conditions, your risk on this looks more and more comparable to the flu. This is a disease that affects, you know, and the University of Pittsburgh, or UPMC, said this a few days ago, one of the senior doctors, it affects the old, the sick, and the poor. Not to say we shouldn't be very concerned about those people and try to do everything we can to help them, but that does not necessarily mean we should shut down the rest of the country.
So I'm here in Pennsylvania. I told you that I have, I've told you before, I have friends in Texas and Missouri and Kansas. They're out to eat, you know. They've got the waiters and waitresses are wearing the masks. But, you know, my mom went to have her hair done the other day. And I'm sitting here in Pennsylvania. Other than Home Depot, we can't do anything, Alex. And I don't even get it anymore. Like, how these governors even explain themselves. It seems silly.
But it's worse than that, right? In Pennsylvania and Illinois and Michigan, and this, you know, it's a little bit, interestingly, it seems like in New York and California, where there's a little bit more public support, maybe the governors aren't pushing as hard. But in the sort of the purpley states where, you know, there's a lot of people who don't like this, the governors are going the other way. They're getting stricter and stricter.
Yes. Yeah. And I know you're not a political guy at heart. You're a journalist. But I mean, do you see politicization in it? Is there a purposeful politicization?
I mean, there's certainly politicization. What the purpose is, I do not know. Different people say different things. You know, they say, well, you know, this is to try to crash the economy, and then Trump won't get reelected. I don't understand how that works for you if you're the governor of Illinois. I don't understand how blowing up your state's economy for 6 months and frustrating your middle class and your, you know, small business owners so much that everyone is desperate to leave the state helps you. So I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they don't understand the science. I don't know if their polling numbers tell them, hey, things are looking good for you right now, so continue on this path. This is the part of the game that I don't like to play. I just will say I don't understand it.
Alex, do you Alex Berenson with us, by the way. AlexBerenson.com. You've got you on your own website, right? So people can go there.
My own website, and I, you know, mostly people follow me on Twitter.
Yes.
And this is another aspect of this that's dangerous and increasingly dangerous. Twitter is a little bit, I would say Twitter is actually significantly better, but YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, they are actively censoring people who point out problems with what the official narrative is. And that's a dangerous thing in a free society. I understand these are private companies and they can do to some extent what they want, but they're also utilities. So many people use them. If YouTube is gonna pull something that gets a million views or 5 million views because it goes against, you know, what the, you know, quote unquote official narrative is, and this is not a conspiracy theory. This is not somebody saying, oh, you know, Bill Gates cooked this up to sterilize all this. This is just somebody saying, hey, we think the lockdowns are, you know, are doing more harm than good. If they're gonna do that, that's really dangerous, and it's a bad idea because it's gonna push fringe theories.
Alex, you mentioned, I don't mean to be personal, but you just because it caught my attention, you said your wife's a physician. You guys live in New York, don't you?
Yes. So we live outside of New York City, but we live we live about 50 miles north of New York City. But she's a physician at a major hospital in Westchester County, which is north of New York City.
Okay. Yes. So, my gosh, I mean, there's nobody closer to the action, so to speak, than she. What does she think of the things you've been reporting, which are largely considered counterintuitive to most of the mainstream media, by the way?
Well, because she's sort of asked me not to talk too much about her views. And it's better for me to let her speak for herself. I will say this. If she disagreed with me, it would be an impossible situation.
What is she? Is she coming home and saying, Alex, here's what people like to say to me a lot. Chris, when you talk about this with skepticism, you're discounting the severity of coronavirus and how sick it makes people. You're not treating this seriously enough. Have you heard that?
I don't really want to answer that but...
Well, I mean directly to you. I don't mean your wife. You. Have you been accused of you're not taking this seriously enough?
So some people, okay, here's what's really interesting. So I've become a little bit of a hub for a lot of physicians, which has been a surprise to me because I think there are physicians out there, not necessarily the ER docs in New York City, right? Not necessarily the people who saw the very worst of this at the worst. But although even some of those people, I think, there's an ER doc in the Bronx who wrote a very good op-ed in the Post, New York Post a couple of weeks ago, calling for the lockdowns to end in New York City. But I'm talking about other doctors. I'm talking about pediatricians or pulmonologists or people who've seen, especially veteran doctors, who've seen a lot of disease over the years. And they are increasingly frustrated by the way the media is portraying this. And so they're coming to me and they're writing me these long, sometimes quite technical notes that I often post on Twitter that say, here's a good way to look at this. Here's how, as a physician who's treated people for 20 years, I look at this. And those people basically think that not that this isn't real and not that it can't hurt people, but that we are monumentally, or the media is monumentally overestimating the severity of this.
And I won't hold you much longer, but I do want to ask you then, Alex, what are you hearing about this possible resurgence in the fall? Everyone's freaked out about one. Well, like today, for instance, Texas has got this new spike in numbers. What they want to do is, one, point to red states that have reopened in some capacity and say, look at this explosion. Well, one, we know, right? We're testing more, so there's not a direct correlation. That's first, right?
Well, we're testing more. We're also testing more. So Texas, the Midwest, these are places that have a lot of meatpacking plants. They have, and we're testing in prisons. We're testing places where we would expect to see clusters, and we're seeing clusters. So but they're clusters of asymptomatic disease. Who cares if you have a positive test for SARS-CoV-2 unless you're sick? So, and most of these people are young and relatively healthy, and most of them, not all of them, but most of them are going to be asymptomatic. So, by the way, the reason you're hearing about Texas is because in Georgia, things are going so well.
Yeah.
Most of the hospitals, the hospitalizations are down, so you're just not hearing anything. Now, to go back to people are, the media is kind of desperate to find a bad place.
Yes.
They've gone to Texas. They've stopped talking about Georgia, just like they stopped talking about the beaches in Florida when it was clear there was going to be no explosion there. So just to go to your other question about the second wave, this is a respiratory illness. Respiratory illnesses do better in the fall and in the winter. So when you're hearing about the second wave, that's just another way of saying this is more like the flu than we thought. This goes away in the summer. It comes back in the winter. Well, okay, so does the flu, right? And we better be prepared that there will be more cases of this in the winter, just like there's more cases of the flu. And some people will get sick, and some people will die. And we should make sure we have extra hospital capacity in case it gets bad in some one region here or there. And we should make sure that we're doing more to help the nursing homes, which is where the problem has really been on this. So this idea of, oh no, we have to shut down society forever because this is going to come back in the fall. Yeah, it's going to come back in the fall.
Yes.
Like, just like the flu. Get used to it. I mean, but you're not allowed to say that. So people are going to say, I'm a horrible person and I don't care about grandma because I said get used to it. Well, get used to it. This is not going away, and we need to live with it and not blow up our society for it.
And by the way, even if a vaccine is found or when, it's still going to be here. This notion of eradicating it is not going away. As you said, it's here with us to stay.
That's right. We've never gotten rid of the flu. We didn't get rid of TB. We're not getting rid of this. And the idea, when that became the goal, I have no idea.
AlexBerenson.com. Read his work where he writes there. Podcast. I don't know how regularly you're doing the podcast, Alex.
I'm a bit swamped. I've learned that radio is harder than it looks.
Well, look, we're glad you're here contributing when you can. I know you're a very busy man, and I'm so grateful for your insight and time, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Alex Berenson. That's BERENSON. A leading voice pushing back on the conventional wisdom crowd in the media. 610-850-0990, the number 610-850-0990 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
You've been running around, throwing that dirt all on my name.
825, hope your weekend was great. I got the raised beds built, Fast Eddie.
That's awesome, man. How do they look?
Not too bad. I sent a. I was proud enough of them that I sent a picture to my dad.
Oh.
Now I told my boys who were helping me, put them together. Not that there's. I mean, I'm not. Don't misunderstand. I'm not suggesting like I framed a house or something. I understand building a raised bed is not, you know, for guys that, you know, do this regularly. Like, you know, building a raised bed is, you know, like I pulled a Kleenex out of a box or something. It's nothing. For me, it's a day. And, you know, so I got out the skill saw and a couple other things. And I told my sons while I was doing it, I said, don't tell your grandfather anything you see. Because I could just imagine my dad going, what in the hell are you doing? You don't do that like that, whatever that thing is. Don't do. Who taught you how to hold a blunt like that? Whatever. I could just hear my dad, you know, not in a mean way, but in a kind of a jokingly critical way. And so I would say to my sons, I go, now this is not the way I was taught, or this is not the way your grandfather would have you do it. I just know what you're seeing is not what. Don't do as you see. But anyway, we got it done, got it filled up, got the plants put in, even put a little deer fence around it.
Very nice.
So we're going to see. And then I think the rabbit's going to get in there and eat it anyway.
Well, that's what we actually do grow food at
do
a
you?
Plot in Philadelphia. We have our little back area that's specifically for food.
In your home? Or at your home?
Yeah, like in our back lot thing. There's a little patch of grass. So she was talking about, she's like, oh, you know what? Maybe we should try this raised beds thing. I'm like, oh, man. Because my dad, he would look at me trying to do this and be like, what the hell are you doing?
The thing is, I don't try anything because I know I'll screw it up and I'll make myself angry. I will have spent money and I'll have wasted a bunch of time. And that's what I know how it'll end. It's not that I'm not lazy. I always tell my wife, I said, honey, it's not a matter of being lazy. It's a matter of not wanting this to end in an ugly way. I'd like to think in many other facets of my life, I work very hard. But when it comes to, hey, maybe we should think about finishing off the or maybe you could replace the or maybe you could, if you could rip that out and put in a blah. Every time someone starts a sentence like that, I just imagine me angry, sweating, lots of money, calling friends or my dad and people for help and or getting out the phone and showing them what I'm doing. And then, like, it upsets me. So I always, my theory is if you don't start it, you don't have any of that.
That's right.
If you don't start, you can't make yourself angry or out of pocket.
See, one thing, it is so hard for me. So I have this wall that borders like my driveway and like it always overgrows with weeds. So it's just like, all right, I'm gonna pull the weeds out of the wall. So that's one of the things I did this weekend. But I have a problem with leaving something unfinished. It's like I want it to get done.
I know what you mean.
So I literally had to go halfway up the wall, and it's just like, all right, it's starting to get dark. You're going to have to pick this up tomorrow. And I did, and I can't stand that.
I know what you mean. I'm exactly the same way. I grew out of that, I will admit. As I've gotten older, I've stopped that. But there was a period in my life, and I remember it well, where if I started a project, if I'm going to paint a room, I'm going to paint that whole room, and it's going to get done today. I do not want to go to bed knowing I got to get up and paint more of the room tomorrow. Like, I want the room done today.
Yep.
And if I can't finish it in a day, I'm not going to start it. That's often the way I will look at things, which is a terrible way to look at things, by the way. It's an awful way to look at things because it makes you hurry. And when you're up against it and you're starting to lose daylight and you're tired, you start to make mistakes, terrible mistakes. Like, the longer the day gets, the more tired you get and you're racing. Like, that's a recipe to infuriate yourself, Fast Eddie. Now, it takes a decrease in testosterone and a little bit of age to figure that out, but I did.
That's the thing. I'm not there yet.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
I promise. It's nature. It's all coming. It's coming for all of us. Michael's in Springfield waiting patiently. Hey, Michael, good morning. You're on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Thank you, Chris, for having that interview with the president. It was very much needed.
Oh, thank you. It was our honor. I'm so glad you were able to hear it.
That being said, is there any of those Trump buttons left?
We can rustle one up, you bet, if you'd like one, sure.
You know, I was driving to the grocery store yesterday. The car wash was opened, and it was packed. And they looked pretty happy being in their cars again. When I got to the grocery store, the window in the store window, they're closing 1 hour every day, earlier. 1 hour every day because they can't get enough people to work.
To work, yeah.
They're closing 1 hour earlier every day because they can't get enough people to work. And that was kind of bewildering to me.
Out of fear or just people not willing to do the job?
That's what the note said. They couldn't find people to do the work.
Yeah. That's going to be a very interesting problem. That is a real issue. And by the way, you got a governor who's cheering that, just to be clear. There's a governor saying, hey, don't worry about it. If you don't want to go back to work and you're feeling intimidated or you don't feel great about it or you're scared of coronavirus, don't go back and your employer can't make you go. You know, and then he's telling employers, you got to pay them more, too. So how many of those people there are out there? I don't know, Michael. Great point. Sean's been waiting patiently this morning, too. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Chris. Good morning.
How you doing, my friend?
Great interview with the president, man. Definitely loved it. Dr. Birx.
Yes, sir.
When she said what she said about the CDC, I was very perplexed because the CDC was 30,000 less than Johns Hopkins for a very long time. So I felt she said that to shame the CDC and to get in line with the narrative of we got to get to 100,000 deaths.
Oh, your interpretation is she thinks they're being undercounted.
Oh, yeah, they were way under. They were 30,000 under. So as of Friday, the link I went to every day on the CDC website that was updating mysteriously went away. They put up a new link as of the 15th, and now they're at 80-plus thousand deaths, just like Johns Hopkins. I screenshotted everything to you, brother.
All right, Sean. Well, look, that's listen, there is no doubt the count on this thing is hinky. And who it impacts, we know and we've learned the average age of people, you know, that's impacted by this, that we're losing to it, is certainly near 80 and higher. Sean, thank you for that. I'll look into that. Thank you very much. I hadn't considered that. You think Birx is suggesting the CDC was too low? All right. Hey, when we get back, thank you, Sean. Have a great week. Scenes from the class struggle in lockdown. Peggy Noonan has one of the most important pieces, I think, that's been written about this, and I want to share it with you next. I'm hurting, baby. I'm broken down. 8:37 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. So glad to have you with us. If you didn't hear that interview with the president that Michael and Sean and so many of you were very nice to reach out and you were just look, like me, I was honored to have him on the show. It's always exciting. I mean, it's an honor whenever you can hear from the president of the United States. It doesn't matter. But it's always particularly exciting when they come to your little neck of the woods and are willing to talk to you. It's because that's a hard thing to achieve. You don't. I was on my men's Bible study, my Zoom men's Bible study on Saturday. That was the first question out of the gate. What was it like to talk to the president? So I told everybody that it's a bit like bull riding. You're given a finite amount of time and you don't know what's going to happen. You just hope you hang on.
Yeah, that's what I was really trying to pay attention to how you were handling that, because something like that, it's bigger. It's not just, you know, your local official. You are granted a certain amount of time, and you will get told if you're exceeding
They'll hang up on you.
Exactly.
They'll say, he's got to go. Goodbye.
Right.
So, yeah, it is. It's like bull riding. If you can hang on for 8 seconds, then you're good, you know. And short of that, you may fall off. You may get gored. You don't know. But, no, it was a great deal of fun, and we enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. And if you didn't get to hear it, it's available podcast right now. I'll be heading over and doing my podcast after this show today. ChrisStegall.com, and anywhere you listen to podcasts, just look up the Chris Stegall Show podcast, and you can find it there. NoSafeSpaces.com. I don't know if you've been to the website yet and seen this movie, but if you're looking for something high quality to watch at home, and Lord knows we've been spending our fair share of time at home sitting on the couch, this is one that you ought to sit down and watch, I think, even with your kids. You know, my niece is a graduating high school senior. She's heading to Florida in the fall for college. And thankfully, like my 15-year-old son in particular, all three of my kids I hope to raise questioning, pushing back. Not disrespectfully, not being rude, but questioning. Asking questions and not singing from the same hymn. No Safe Spaces is the movie for you. Dennis Prager, Adam Carolla, it makes you laugh. Sometimes it's downright depressing, but No Safe Spaces got a 99% audience rating at RottenTomatoes.com, which is the highest rating of any film last year. It's a fantastic look at, one, what makes the country exceptional, But it also shows how the left, and we're certainly seeing it with coronavirus, we've seen it with global warming, and on and on. I mean, tax policy, you know, if you have a counter opinion to anything from the CDC count to mask wearing to pick it, well, the mob shouts you down and says you're a denier or you're cruel or you're heartless. Well, the film brilliantly displays that. And how you can fight back, though, that's also critical. People featured in this thing like Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson and Tim Allen, even left-wing folks who know this is a problem, honest people on that front like Van Jones and Cornel West and Alan Dershowitz, you love this film. NoSafeSpaces.com. All right, let me turn to a piece in the Wall Street Journal from Peggy Noonan that you need to hear. I might have to take a break and finish it, but it's important enough that I want you to hear it in full. And I typically don't read an entire editorial like this, but it's that strong and it's that significant. It's that on point. And if ever there were something that synthesizes the way I've been feeling about this and trying to talk about it, it's Peggy's piece in the Wall Street Journal from the weekend. Scenes from the class struggle in lockdown, it's called. Those who are anxious to open up the economy have led harder lives than those holding out for safety. Wow. Now, before I read a word, how about that as the byline? Those who are anxious to open up the economy have led harder lives than those holding out for safety.
She has to be from Philly. I love it.
Right? I mean, you can already see where this is going. She says, I think there's a growing sense that we have to find a way to live with this thing, manage it best we can, and muddle through. COVID-19 is not going away anytime soon. Summer may give us a break. Late fall, probably not. Vaccines are likely far off. New therapies and treatments might help a lot, but keeping things closed up tight until there are enough tests is not a viable plan. There will never be enough tests. It was botched from the beginning. If we ever catch up, it will probably be at the point tests are no longer urgently needed. Meantime, we must ease up and manage. We should go forward with a new national commitment to masks, social distancing, hand washing. These simple things have proved the most valuable tools in the tool chest. We have to enter each day armored up. At the same time, we can't allow alertness to become exhaustion. We can't let an appropriate sense of caution turn into an anxiety formation. We can't become a nation of agoraphobics. We'll just have to live carefully. Here's something we should stop. There's a class element in this public debate. It's been there the whole time, but it's getting worse, and few in public life are acting as if they're sensitive to it. Our new professionals, the past 3 months, have made plenty of room for medical and professionals warning of the illness. Excuse me, our news professionals. The last 3 months have made plenty of room for medical professionals warning of the illness. That's good. We need that. It is news. They are not now paying an equal degree of sympathetic attention to those living the economic story, such as the Dallas woman who pushed back, opened her hair salon, and was thrown in jail by a preening judge. He wanted an apology. She said she couldn't apologize for trying to feed her family. Listen to this. There is a class divide between those who are on hard line lockdowns and those who are pushing back. I'm going to say that again. There is a class divide between those who are hard line on lockdowns and those who are pushing back. In other words, you're never going to meet a broke person who's pro-lockdown. You're not going to meet somebody who works hard and is now out of work and taking a payout, an unemployment check, and pro-lockdown. They're very rare. Now, you may meet some that just like to be lazy. Like, it's just a lazy paycheck. But you will not find hardworking people who are now not working who are pro-lockdown. But you will find very well-heeled people pro-lockdown. They're probably... I wrote about this in the suburbs where I live. I wrote about it was one of the probably the most responded to pieces I've ever written, with a lot of anger, by the way, because it hit close to home. Suburbanites, one paycheck households that are huge paychecks, stay-at-home moms and the really well-to-do six-figure dad. Some cases vice versa, but for the most part, it's stay-at-home mom and really well-heeled dad job. And dad can work at home, and they haven't missed a single paycheck, and they're not missing a nickel. And those are the people that think this can go on indefinitely. They have the luxury, I have always said, they have the luxury of being afraid. It is a luxury to be afraid right now. It is a luxury. Let me say that again. It's a luxury to fear coronavirus. You are privileged if you're afraid of the virus more than you're afraid of going back to work. That's just true. We see the professionals on one side, Peggy writes, those James Burnham called the managerial elite and Michael Lind in the New Class War calls the overclass, and regular people on the other side. The overclass are highly educated and exert outsized influence as managers and leaders of important institutions, hospitals, companies, state houses. The normal people aren't connected through professional or social lines to power structures, and they have regular jobs, service workers, small business owners. Since this pandemic began, the overclass has been in charge, the scientists, the doctors, the political figures, the consultants, calling the shots for the average folks. But personally, they have less skin in the game. The National Institutes of Health Scientists, the National Institutes of Health Scientist won't lose his livelihood over what's happened. Neither will the midday anchor. In other words, Dr. Fauci and Jake Tapper won't lose their jobs or their incomes over this. Peggy says, I've called this divide the protected versus the unprotected. There is an aspect of it that is not much discussed, but bears on current arguments. How you have experienced life has a lot to do with how you experience the pandemic and its strictures. I think it's fair to say citizens of red states have been pushing back harder than those of blue states. It's not that those in red states don't think there's a pandemic. They've learned all about the pandemic. But they realize it will continue. They also know they may themselves get sick, and they also figure this way. Hundreds of thousands could die and the American economy taken down, which would mean millions of other casualties, economic casualties. Or hundreds of thousands could die and the American economy is damaged but still stands, in which case there will be fewer economic casualties, fewer bankruptcies and foreclosures, fewer unemployed and ruined. They'll take the latter. It's a loss either way, but one loss is far worse than the other. They know the politicians and scientists can't really weigh all this on a scale with any precision because life is a messy thing that doesn't want to be quarantined. Here's a generalization based on a lifetime of experience and observation, writes Peggy Noonan. The working class people who are pushing, listen to this. This is so critical. The working class people who are pushing back have harder lives than those who are now determining their fate. They haven't had familial or economic ease. No one sent them to Yale. They often come from considerable family dysfunction. This has left them tougher or harder, you choose the word. They're more fatalistic about life because life has taught them to be fatalistic. And they look at these scientists and reporters making these warnings about how tough it's going to be if we lift shutdowns, and they don't think, oh, what informed, caring observers. What they think is, you have no idea what tough is. You don't know what painful is. And if you don't know, why should you have so much to say? You hear what she's saying? Of course you do. She's saying people at home who are struggling, who have led hard lives, are watching doctors in lab coats and anchors saying, if we lift this lockdown, it'll be terrible. It's going to get tough. And working class people are saying, you people don't know what tough is. You don't have any idea what tough is. Let me take a break here and finish with Peggy's piece. By the way, Sean called me a while ago and he said, you know, that story about Dr. Birx quibbling with the CDC. The Washington Post's account of this is she's mad at the CDC because she thinks they're overcounting, not undercounting. I'm just telling you what the Washington Post, I mean, and take that with a grain of salt, but that's what they're saying. Telephone number 610-850-0999. You can read it for yourself. I put it up on my Facebook page. But I'm always very intrigued when I start to hear that White House officials are starting to argue. And I don't doubt they are. They should be. Thoughtful people should be disagreeing about the way forward on this thing. There is no one-size-fits-all. There's a lot we don't know. The Noonan piece, I want to conclude with this. I'm not going to be able to get to all of it, but I highly encourage you to read it all. She says, meanwhile, governors are playing into every stereotype of the overclass. On Tuesday, Pennsylvania's Tom Wolf said in a press briefing that those pushing against the shutdown are cowards. Local officials who cave into this coronavirus will pay a price in state funding. These folks are choosing to desert in the face of the enemy in the middle of a war. He said he'll pull state certificates like liquor licenses and any businesses that open. He must have thought he sounded uncompromising like General George Patton. He seemed more like Patton slapping the soldier. No sympathy, no respect, only judgment. She goes on to talk about Gretchen Whitmer doing the same. People are in economic distress and worry that the foundations of their lives are being swept away. How does name-calling help? She might as well call them deplorables. She said the protests only make the lockdowns last longer, which sounded less like irony than a threat. When you are reasonable with people and show them respect, they will want to respond in kind. But when they feel those calling the shots are being disrespectful, they will push back hard and rebel, even in ways that may hurt them. This is no time to make our divisions worse. The pandemic is a story not only about our health, but our humanity. Peggy Noonan, Wall Street Journal, called Scenes from the Class Struggle in Lockdown. It's brilliant.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.